adopted.
Yeah.
And Walter Thompson was born in Shoal Lake in 1917 and was raised on the farm practically up until 36. I was living in Forestry, Clear Lake. And the war broke out, I quit to join the Grenadiers. And we went from there to Jamaica, 16 months down in Jamaica, which was very nice, which I didn't care for the climate myself, it was too hot. In those days there was no refrigeration or nothing, so everything you had there was all hot, there was no, you know, couldn't have any refreshments without you, there was no ice in the board. And then get back here for a month. And then we went over to Hong Kong. We didn't know where we were going at that time.
Did you get, how much training did you get before you, went?
The thing is, we, when we first got in, which I liked, we were taking the bigger machine gun training. We were training that. And it was just a waste of time because when we went to Jamaica, they took much figures away from us and we had no, give us rifles. And then when we come back from Jamaica, our rifles was condemned. They gave us other old rifles, I think from the first, must have been from the First World War, because they were old. We never even had a chance to fire out of the darn things. And then our way over on the boat in the Watia, they had the little bit of training, very little, and they gave us a mortar gun that we'd never seen one before. And then we never did see the shell. And so when we did get in there, we got into action, I was candidate with a gun with the shells and didn't know which end would went in, as far as that goes. But as far as the defense of Hong Kong was, there was nothing there whatsoever. There was just millions of dollars, I guess, fraud to take the pillbox. Three or three bullets could go through them, and if not, if you stayed in, it was death anyway, because all they'd do was knock off the chap in front, and they could throw a grenade in they had a ventilation system top right over, and just throw a grenade down in there, and that's it. Tell everybody in there, you know. And then they had the big Bertha gun is just pointing out to the sea, of course. The defense was all out towards the sea, and of course they came in the back way and just overland.
Did you see much fighting personally?
Not too much. But I was in the Aberdeen Reservoir deal there, up through there. As far as there were, some of them were, it was pretty tough. But some of them were, I didn't get in and out of action at all. But I was in when the bombing stopped, and that day, the first morning to come over, I was right there when they had his first. But they had the old planes. We had nothing. We could do with them.
Did they have any air power at all?
They had air power, such as it was, but it is the old, I would imagine, the old planes from the First World War, you know, just the old lumbering type, and they come in there right over, and you see the pilot right in there. In fact, our platoon knocked one or two down. Just was right by them. So that's all those were coming, but as far as that, we had nothing at all. I think we had one or two planes that was there that wanted to take off, they never got off the ground.
And then I guess you went from there across to the island, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I was on the island. We had a week or two training on the island. And we were just going back on Sunday when they told us we had to go back up, but they had already declared war. Well, you know, Jeff, but he hit the first before he hit Hong Kong. If we come here, we hit us the next 6 morning.
Oh,
Pearl Harbor. Yeah. And then they hit us the following day. But as far as defense is concerned, we had nothing. We had no training, we had nothing.
Did the units stay pretty much together, or did it get pretty scattered after a time?
After we take prisoners, you mean?
At the fighting, when the fighting was going on, like, were you able to maintain order, or did things just sort of...
No, I would say no. I would definitely say there was no order at all. In fact, we had a lot of officers from the First World War, and they were shaken up. They said, well, they're not used to guerrilla warfare. They said, we never fought this way. This isn't the way we fought. We're used to trench fighting, you know.
Yeah.
And this was little training we did get. This is the training we got, is all, which is very, very little. In fact, we come back to pick up a bunch from the Saskatchewan regiment, reject. And they were taking they come over there, they figure, well, it's going to be another Jamaica deal, I see, anyway. So they put them on our draft to make up the numbers.
Right. Yeah.
And we got over there, they were going to send a lot of them ready to come back. Some with toes off, and some with ulcers, and I don't know what. And they never, none of them ever had any training whatsoever.
Just totally green, and then they went
totally, right. Totally green.
How did you find out about the surrender?
You're referring to
the surrender at Hong Kong.
We were notified through their offices had to capitulate, to cut the water off and everything. So that was the end of the story. And they were told to meet at a certain place, and that's where they picked us up. And as far as I don't know if there's any changes or not, as far as the Chinese is concerned, I wouldn't trust them as far as I control them. They sold us out. They give our positions away, that she's aware. And then when they had the victory march, they were spitting on us and all as we were going down the street.
But there was Japanese infiltrators too, wasn't
there?
Oh
yes, they come in. Sampans. They were coming in. In fact, they were even in the camp. Barbara's knowledge, I think, was in the camp at that time when we first went over there. And there they were, officers, and they could take over from us. We didn't have a chance. You know. There we had the old army boots with the steel helmet, with clink clank and bang bang, and here they had their runners on with big toes, you know. They could, no chance, you could sneak up on you, you didn't know where you were,
yeah.
And all. And they could hear us coming a mile away.
Yeah. And yet, they held that island for 3 weeks, and Singapore, with 40,000 troops, fell in 3 days.
Yeah.
So
the
fighting must have been pretty heavy.
It was, they suffered a lot, quite a big loss too, but for what we had, I think we done pretty good. But as far as I had no chip in my shoulder as far as the service is concerned, because I joined, but when I joined, I figured to go that way. I was just patriotic to Hitler at that time. I was very disappointed when we went to Jamaica, and then when we went here, I was just that much more disappointed, but then we got into action. But we went where we were supposed to go, you know, I had no chip on my shoulder that way, but we were definitely, I would say, sold out as far as the government was concerned. They must have known something that what was going on there, and they sent us over there with nothing.
Your supplies never even got there, did they?
No.
So then, when you got together, they sent you to North Point, is that right?
That's right. We went across to North Point. North Point, that is right on the island.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed there. I don't know. Memory's not too good. But we stayed, I think it must have been a year. Then we went from there. They put us over to Calhoun, back to our old camps where we first landed there. They were all shot for the dickens, you know. And we had to put up time for the back from there. Pretty foul conditions. Here in the harbor, bodies of Chinese and Aztec men at the back, floating there in the harbor, coming up in there for days, and supplies and all, you know.
Did they treat your troops brutally when you first capitulated?
Some cases they did. Some cases where I was saying for myself, it was mostly mentally and. Starvation is what physically. I got slapped around once, but not saluting a corporal. He was a character, and he would slap at anybody come around. They didn't salute him, and they got it, you know. But I seen one of the boys got a beating from the sergeant, a guy from Kamloops. He was born in Canada. He could talk perfect English, you know. He was a toughie.
The Kamloops kid?
Yeah. But I didn't go to I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate. I didn't go to Japan. I was on two drafts, but my feet was bad, so they put me in the hospital, and I was a patient orderly there for the last year and a half.
Is that what they call happy feet?
That's right. They still.
Could you describe that for me? Because I've heard a lot about it, and I don't know exactly what it is yet.
Well, yeah, they burn your feet, just burn. And we used to, in the evenings, we had such a shower, such as it was, we'd go and soak our feet up to there in the cold water, and this concrete, you know, to make them numb. And they used to cause water buffaloes, but that'd take away the pain, but your feet would swell up, you know, you could only take it so long, and they'd start swelling up in there. And there's a pain, and nobody even knows what it is to, well, to grow in that guy's crying like babies, you know, with his feet, are just, pain is just terrible. Oh, well, we had a few suicides, I guess, because they couldn't take it any longer, you know.
Do they know what it was? What caused it?
No, not at that time they didn't. They knew it was malnutrition, starvation, you know, but I understand what they figured is the fats, less the nerves of your feet, and that's where all kinds of, there's all kinds of nerves in your feet, mm-hmm. more than any part of your body. And they claim that this is what's happening, is that the fat, fatty substance around your nerves, it all deteriorated through our diet, and the nerves were just open to touch, you know, your step on it. Mm-hmm. Well, I still got my feet. If I ever did come normal, I wonder what would happen. That's what I'm used to them now. My toes, I can't twist the toes at all. They're all sticking right up. So I got a 10% pension for that. But I didn't get it through your lodge. I got that threat from Ottawa family. They checked my files in the back and they said, you know, my feet wasn't improving. I said, be entitled to a pension from the feet.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in any of the gardening that went on? Like, apparently the men started gardening in
the Hampshire. Yes, they did. Well, I did start at that time. I was in the, the hard work that I'd done when my feet started is we were digging tunnels in the hills for defense for the Japs. You know, you had to dig in these darn tunnels. And that's when, well, I was maybe there for 4 or 5 months working on that project, and I tell you, it was pretty rough looking.
Yeah.
Bare feet, and your feet starting to burn.
Yeah.
But there was these gardens, and of course they're using the human consumption for the fertilizers, you know, throw it in big holes and dish it out and throw it all over the plants.
It must have made a big difference when you were getting produce from the garden rather than...
We got very little, if anything at all. I don't know. I mean, it might have been some, but if it was, we got very, very little at all.
Did the Japs take it all?
Well, I guess they took the most of it, the most of it. We didn't get it. And they could, the officers, they finally just put them in a camp by themselves. But they were treated a little better, I'm pretty sure, than we were. In fact, they were getting cigarettes or something. We didn't get nothing at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you know why that was? Why they put them in a camp by themselves?
I don't know what the reason would be for that. I couldn't, wouldn't want to say actually. But
did you have any, like, did they maintain your regimental order while you were there? Like, did you take orders from your superior officers, or did you take them straight from the Japanese?
More or less straight from the Japanese. They just told us when to line up and when not to line up.
Mm-hmm.
When they had the escape, I don't know. I think it was 5 of the boys who took off, which is a very foolish thing, because they were warned from the British that they're on there, that that time of the year, the typhoon season, that they would never, ever, ever make it. They said even if you got over, that is we're in North Point Camp,
mm-hmm.
they said even if you got over to the mainland, they said you doubt very much whether you'll even get over there and you'll never make it. And I understood after that the boat they got from was Chinese, he sold them out. They got them just when they got on the boat, and they were really funny, according to one of the Chinese actors, telling us that they were really cruel to them. Of course, that made it tough for the rest of the camp, too, you know, and then they slapped down more starvation on us, which wasn't, we weren't getting much then at the time, so it didn't help. I mean, it didn't make much difference, I don't imagine that.
What kind of rice did you get? Like, the men in Japan got some red rice, or some kind of cereal grain that they called rice. Did you get?
No, we just got the white rice.
Just polished white rice.
Polished white rice. That's right. And the thing is, we never could. If we could have gotten enough of it, it wouldn't have been so bad. Of course, I don't know. Maybe it would have been worse on us. I don't know. But we it upon the Australian butter can, and it's in the water put so deep, and that would be your ration. And it wouldn't be packed in, it would just there and just slash off the top, but that was it, you had to go. That was all you would get for that.
How many times a day did you get that?
We used to get it once, and finally we got it twice a day, but we didn't make that. So twice a day. First they would give us tea, and we'd say, every step, well, all we got first, and once a day, and then finally got it twice a day. The odd time you'd get the fish, rotten fish, you get a little bit of that, but it's so damn rotten, but it still tasted good, I can tell you. And then we had the octopus one time, and it just, it tastes like ink, I don't know, horrible, but I mean, it could tell it's something.
Better than rice.
And that would change the rice, yeah. Of course, there was no salt or nothing at that rice. You can imagine rice at any time, and I never could, did care for rice, regardless of how rice pudding, how well you made them, I never had them in.
Did you get a chance to steal food at all? Were you ever on warehouse details?
No, I wasn't on the warehouse details. I was on the kitchen fatigue, like carrying the foods over, but many times I went short because I just over a little too much, and I went without me more than once because I was looking after the rations, and I was supposed to see this, look after yourself first, they said. But two or three occasions I went without any of these Tom and meal because I figured I'd go back to the kitchen and get some more. But no way.
If you were in the hospital, you must have seen some pretty grisly cases in there.
Oh, yeah. I had to, they get an order. If anybody died in my shift I was on, I had to prepare them, you know, and it was pretty rough. The toothbrush and old rag to get a hold of, that is where you scram to bury them, roll them up in the blanket like that, you know.
By the time they got to the hospital, were most of the men pretty demoralized, or did many men come out of the hospital, or usually once they went in, were they there?
Well, I was there at the time they had the diphtheria, like the diphtheria hit the camp, and my buddies were going in, dying right and left, and we used to, if we'd get a cigarette butt, we'd share it, you know. Found out finally they got them to take a test, and we found those were carriers, and I was one of these carriers. So I was with prison within a prison. I don't know how many would there be, maybe 300-400 of us. We're all in this other prison, all fenced around and all guarded in. We were carriers of the disease. So I don't know, I think I spent about 6 weeks in there, and that's when my feet was really bad at the worst. And I was told, they put me in the hospital there, and one of the British orderlies, good-hearted guy, he gives me a big bowl of cold water, and of course his doctor, Ashton, I think his name was Indian doctor, he was. He's pretty tough, and the guy, he came in and spotted me. Well, I'd fallen asleep in this water, you know, and she said, get this damn water buffalo out of there. So they discharged me from hospital and put it back on the line.
He was with the Allied troops, was he?
He's with the Allied, with the Indian troops. He was kind of pretty tough guy with some of them. I think they charged him, I'm not sure, and I don't. They talked about charging him as a collaboration with the Japs. He lived like a king compared to the rest of them, I think. This is what.
Was there a lot of that went on?
In our camp, I would say there's not an awful lot in our camp, but I understand from what I mean. Of course, as I say, I can't go by hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
Not in our camp, not too much outside of this one case. I recall at the time now. But there's a lot of other things that, you know, through the years you forget. I don't like to talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
My wife divorced from her. I didn't even know any more long kids. You know, I just don't like to. Best of the but you
mm-hmm.
see.
Mm-hmm.
But it, and we got out, I was sent to the Philippines, I didn't go 18 days in the Philippines, we had the royal treatment, I can tell you that. And the American boats came in there, just trying to get the prince, what the heck was it, Roberts, I think it was, came in and, they just gave us a real royal welcome. And I recall my buddy and I, we went into a Chinese restaurant there, and to for one, we had no money, of course, and we sit down to order What do you want? He says, he said, you want to bake a cake? He says, you got any money? He says, we want to bake a cake. We ask for a meal. You give us a meal. We pay for it first before we eat it first before we pay for it. And there's some Australians. The Australians come in too first. The Red Caps picking it. And they were in there. And they went up to this Chinaman. They blast him because he was there. He'd been feeding the Japs. Yeah. Well, and giving them. They blasted him. They said, you give them the best, he said. And it's on the house, he said, to this Chinese character. And that's when we went from then on, till it went on this book, Lord, he would give us a big time name.
You have any contact with the outside during the war, before the end? Like, did you have any idea how the war was going?
There was rumors. I think there had been radios in camps, and we got a little bit of it, but we didn't know what was going on. Actually, I think it was 2 days, a day or two after the war was over, before we knew anything about it in Hong Kong camp itself, but we knew there's something going on, and the first thing we know, there was no guards around it. And this is when we realized then that it had been over. So, but I think there was contact to upload, say, 6 months, maybe a year before, anyway. We heard about the time of when they had the B-29s, you know, we heard about these things and that. And then when they hit Hiroshima with the
A-bomb,
the Japs, you know, some of these guys would go poof, poof. We thought that they were these blockbusters that they were using. We didn't realize then what it was. But when there was an air raid there and come, they took off to be hell. I guess they figured maybe this is coming again, you know, I don't know. But,
were you involved in any of the concerts or the little skits at the Mentor?
No, I wasn't involved with them, but I used to go there. They were really good. They really had some good actors in there. I can tell you, they dressed as women. You swear to God, there was one or two of them in there that just looked like a woman, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, they really dressed it for you. They were. We had some great shows. I think three or four of them, because I know them, I recall, but they were really. But as I say, you have to make your own the best. And if you, like I said, we had a few suicides in there. Well, it's a case that you figure you're going to get out, which I figured I was going to get out. And twice I certainly died, and I wouldn't expect to come through. But I determined I was still going to get out for Christmas, but we didn't know what Christmas was.
Yeah. When did you first run into the Canadian government when you finally got out? Like, what was your sort of first contact with Canadians, and the Americans sort of brought you home?
When they come back, the first contact they had was at Victoria.
Gordon.
We landed at Victoria, you know. And then I came back. I stayed over. I had my brother there met me, and I stayed there. I don't know, it was about 3 or 4 days, 5 days to get that. I asked if it'd be okay, and he said, sure, if you stay there. And I could. Then we come back here, and then the first time that I had that contact, actually, that was referring to Alfred, otherwise, with them.
Did you think that they treated you satisfactorily? Like, did you have to fight for?
Oh yes, some cases, yes, some cases, no. I don't know. I wouldn't want to elaborate too much on that. When I made my mistake, I think, when I first came back, they wanted to put me in a camp, according to prayer, you know. And I said, well, I've had enough camp life. I just don't want any more camp life.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if it's all the same to you people, I said, I would just assume be an outpatient of coming back and forth and going to a camp. And I know the cases where there's some of them went to that camp, they promoted 50, 60, 80% pension. And they discharged me a year later with a 10% pension.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my stomach and dogging me over a good 4 or 5 years afterward. Still, but I mean, up until then, they kept telling me a nervous stomach, and I never got nowhere with it. Now, finally, the doctor, he said, well, come on. He said, well, he said, did they tell you what caused a nervous stomach? I said, no, they didn't tell me. I said, well, he said, something causes, so he took me in and found out I had a septic ulcer. So they called me back about maybe a year later, up to their lodge for a checkup, and then they said then that He said, well, you've done well by yourself, Thompson, according to my weight. I put on about 35 pounds. Eh? Mm-hmm. And I said, no thanks to you people. He said, what do you mean? Well, I said, I happened to go to my own doctor. I said, 4 or 5 years suffering, and I went to a doctor and a specialist, and he found out he was an ulcer. I said, yeah. And he said, Pepe, he said, yeah. Well, he said, you know, sometimes you can't spot them. He said. And I said, well, after 5 years, it's funny, you can't spot them. So he said, well, we'll shake these guys up, he said. So he sent me to Deer Lodge, and he upset me and all the, through the whole treatment again to find out that there was scars there. Oh, yes. So they gave me 10% pension for that after 5 years. That is after 1 year. And there's cases like that are referred to, and that's what my peak. And I was in the, I was in the DVA building, worked there for 14 years. In fact, I lived there after I got divorced. I was living upstairs in the suite. And I was in a position through Northern Boys to find out that once the letter came through from Ottawa, after I'd been checked up, they called me in for a checkup. And they got a letter back stating that my pension would remain as it was. And that was then I was getting, I got an increased 10% for my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
The next 10% I got, as I was saying, I got my neck with Ottawa. This is where I found out that these guys must be paying hanky panky at this end. Because, Ottawa wrote and said that this man's condition, his condition, not improvement, it's not anything to deteriorate. Look into this matter immediately, in other words. So I get a letter back to report in again, which I knew ahead of them even, I was to go back. So one of the chaps in DVA said to me, well, did you write Ottawa? I said, no. But he said, well, he showed me this, you know, it's an inside dope deal. And so I asked him, I said, how come? Well, he said, periodically at Ottawa, they'll check through these papers and find these things out. So I got a 10% increase on my feet, which brought it up to 30%. And then when, was it a year ago or 2 years ago, the automatically brought practically everybody up to 50%. I was brought up to 50% at that time again.
Mm-hmm.
As you may know, it's 50%.
Getting back to you say you have stomach problems. Do you think that it's sort of on account of the food that you had while you were in there, or the account of the change of the food from being in or coming out? Like, did you have any ill effects when you first started eating?
Yeah, well, I did. One time over there, what happened, I don't know, because, see, when I was in Shamshapo, there's certain times, certain patients, at certain times, they'd take them to Bone Road Hospital, I think it was, on an island.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only certain times, and it happened that I got this stomach trouble then, a prisoner died then, that's when they didn't expect me to live. And in fact, I would go out, you know, and then I'd come back, and remember Dr. Captain Gray said, well, he said, I don't think you'll see morning, but he said, I'll be around later on and during the night. And that is when I was a patient already at this time.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still come back, and I heard him mention this, he didn't think you'd see morning, you know. But I come through this, but they didn't know whether it's not in the bowels, they could never figure out what, at that time, what the cause of it was. But it seemed to get over that okay. But when it come back, it's in my stomach, it's ever since it's never been the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether it's the right diet. I guess that it had some effect on it, there's no doubt about it. And maybe coming back here and that is good. I don't know. I couldn't do something I couldn't say in that at all.
Did you work on Kaitak at all? On the airport?
Yeah. That's where I was. And my feet went haywire on me. I lost a daughter-in-law from when I was over there too. I didn't know if she was 2 and a half. She died with leukemia. I didn't know nothing about the last time I come back.
Did you get any mail at all when you were?
I got one card all the time I was there.
Did you get any letters out today?
Well, they were supposed to be let out, but I don't know. I don't think they did get out, and I never received them here. I know if they did. There's some mail went through, but none of mine ever did get out.
Did you get any Red Cross parcels for you?
I think maybe 1 and a half, or 2 at the very most. 1 and a half, I think it's all we got.
Over 3 and a half years.
Yeah. They grade the parcels and take what they want out of them, and that is the best to take the leftovers.
Do you remember anything about the groups of five that they instituted? I'm just not sure how that works. I've heard people mention it, but I'm not sure how it. Haven't been able to figure out how it works. After the escape attempt at North Point, they instituted some kind of a thing where if you tried to escape, everybody else got punished or something. I just wondered if you knew about that, if you could explain that.
That night that it happened, they got us all out of the parade square. It was raining. They took people out of the hospital and all. And it was raining cats and dogs and cold, you know, and it's like the typhoon season. Mm-hmm. And they beat the officers around, and this is it. They said, if there's any more escapes, this is going to be... Then they did cut the rations right off the bat. They got really tough then for a long time. But then they warned them, anybody ever, that this is what is going to be happening to them at that time. But there was no more tied to... I know one of the British chaps, wasn't kicked or trying to escape. He just threw himself on the electric wire, you know, to commit suicide. But there was no more tries that I know of. But to my knowledge, that's that. Mm-hmm. Because it was suicide anyway to begin with. We don't know the country, and you know, especially in amongst the Chinese, it's like turning their own grandmother in for a bowl of rice.
Yeah,
no chance at all.
There was a lot of Chinese refugees in that in Hong Kong, wasn't there?
When there first went there. That's right, for sure was, yeah.
Would you do it again if you had the chance?
Yes and no. I don't know. If it's fighting for our country, it's a fight. I would say if it's going to protect us at all, I definitely would be right in there. The only time they ever get me to fight when they start hitting Canada directly. But that is the time when things were, you didn't realize you could hit the within a few minutes you can hit any part of the country, the world. Well, I think so. If it come down to it, I'd be in there, definitely. But there'd be no chance you wouldn't, you know, where I am anyway, they wouldn't accept me. But I think I would be, you know. I think if there's anything to keep the economy of our country, I think I'd gladly put on the uniform again.